supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Behavioral disorders and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. When I was a kid, I was short, very short, and I got bullied frequently, publicly. And it was humiliating, and it was shameful, and I would go to school fearful of being bullied again. I wasn't alone. Many kids were being bullied. Back then, it wasn't talked about. Today, there's a new form of bullying that's more dangerous, more prolific, even more lethal, cyberbullying. In recent years, we hear more and more stories about our youth getting humiliated, beaten for public consumption, and even stories of suicide. So what is cyberbullying? Why is it becoming more common? And how can we protect our kids from being victimized by it? Joining me now here in the studio is Tricia Jones, a professor at the Department of Psychological Study and Education at Temple, and she's the author of Kids Working It Out, Stories and Strategies for Making Peace in Our Schools. Trish, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
I'm also joined on the telephone by Perry Aftab. She's a privacy lawyer managing cybercrime, privacy, and cyber abuse. She consults for government and the private sector. She's the executive director of WiredSafety.org and StopCyberbullying.org. Perry, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for including me.
And our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Give us a call if your child has been cyberbullied and you don't know what to do, or perhaps you're a teacher or a school administrator and would like to talk about what some options are. Perry, let's start with you. Help us understand what cyberbullying is and what it's not, how it's different from regular face-to-face bullying.
Well, cyberbullying is when one child or teen uses an interactive technology or the internet, which includes cell phones and gaming devices, to target another. It's essentially using technology as a weapon to hurt another child. Now, cyberbullying has four different styles, two of which exist offline. Mean girls that are done in groups. They're always mean, but they're not always girls. And power hungry. They do it to show that they can. These are the ones who beat you up in the schoolyard and shove you into a locker. And those two types exist online, in addition to a subtype of power hungry, which is called revenge of the nerds. These kids are often the victim of an offline bully.
Well, tell us how this happens online. The mean girls and the guys who would shove you into a locker. How does that happen online?
Well, mean girls generally use social exclusion to do their damage. You're fat, you're ugly, you are gay, you're stupid, your whatever it is, they don't like that day. And that the rumors and creating fake profiles on the internet pretending to be you or talking about you works probably better online than it does offline. The power-hungry ones will send you a death threat or threaten to extort you by telling your secrets or lying about you online, or threatening to hack your computer or steal your music from your devices.
You know, from what I've read, cyberbullying, and I'll turn to you, Trish, is far more pervasive than face-to-face bullying, yes?
Yes, it's the most rapidly increasing form of bullying that we know of in our schools. We have a pretty bad problem with face-to-face bullying, but we have a worse problem with cyberbullying, especially since there are very few laws and very few policies that really prevent this or that help schools and parents and educators know what to do about it.
Why is it so pervasive?
The first reason is that so many of our young people are on cyber technologies in a way that in previous generations weren't. For example, last year the Pew Research group issued a study on social internet use of adolescents 15 to 17. Found out that over 90% of adolescent males and females are on social websites or are on the internet, and that over half of them have their own home pages. You know, when a lot of the teachers and principals and counselors that are in our schools, they grew up in a time when they not only didn't have that, nobody had that. You know, the internet technology through, you know, is just one form. So we have kids who are, they are literally wired in a different way in terms of how they connect and make relationships.
Yeah, we did a show on generational issues, I think, last year. And, you know, in previous generations, you know, parents' knowledge of children was only slightly off. There was, you know, quantitative change between parents' generation and children. But today, you know, it's quantitatively and it's qualitative. It's vast that parents have no idea the lives their children are living, which makes it difficult to supervise or even offer compassion.
Exactly.
For what's going on. Perry, lots of people can be involved. What are your thoughts about why it's more pervasive than face-to-face? Is it easier?
Yes, I'll answer your question in just a second. I just wanted to correct a misconception, which is very popular, that there are no laws. Every state in the United States has at least one law that relates to harassment and includes electronic and digital harassment. And we now have a federal law that says that if you use the internet to communicate with someone anonymously with an intent to annoy, that is now a federal crime. So there are laws. The problem is people don't know that they're there, and most law enforcement officers don't know what to do when you report it. Now, the reason I think we're seeing a growth is, A, it's easier. In real life, we teach our children to behave generally because people on the outside are telling them when they've gone too far. If they're too loud, someone's going to tell them that they're using the wrong voice for the library. If they're running in the hall, someone's going to tell them that they're going to slip and fall. So we teach our children through social input from outsiders, adults, their peers, people they're interacting with in an inappropriate fashion. And online, they generally tend to be blind to these. They don't see them. You're in a room and you're attacking someone, and the people around you are generally not saying you've gone too far. You can post a picture online and say mean things about somebody, generally from the comfort of your bedroom all alone. So there's none of this social corrective behavior. In addition, you don't see the pain. So you may be careless. You may be acting out inappropriately and not realizing how far you've gone. And you generally, just as the nature of where they are developmentally, don't understand the consequences of their actions.
Well, kids don't understand the consequences of their actions. And from my research, and I'll turn to you, Trish, many kids who have been cyberbullied are cyberbullies.
Right. They're,
so on a logical level, that makes no sense because they know how much harm it caused.
Right. But in some ways, they feel powerless. They don't know, how am I going to defend myself? And so they figure, well, if this happened to me, maybe I can turn it back around and get some more power or some control over my life by doing it to somebody else. And that really aggravates the situation.
Give us a feel. I'm going to turn back to you, Perry. What it looks like, what happens, what are the techniques they use? Do they do it with text messaging too, or is it only on computers?
They use every cyber interactive technology known to man, and in ways we never dreamed they could be used. So there are 44 different ways kids have identified that you can use a cell phone alone to text or cyberbully someone. You could take a picture of them in an embarrassing situation and send it on to their friends. You can record their voice after you've gotten them angry. You can provoke them so that they're ranting and take a picture of that and put it onto Facebook. You can prank call them. You can steal their cell phone when it's sitting on the counter and reprogram it so that you've either put a password in place and they can't use it, or maybe you've taken their boyfriend or girlfriend's speed dial number and you programmed it for your own so that when you send a message, a text message to them saying that you're breaking up with them, they're going to think it came from their girlfriend or boyfriend. And all you have to do is grab their phone again and switch it back and they'll never know the difference.
All right, all right. You can't go on because I'm getting upset here and overwhelmed. I want to ask you, Trish, as a psychologist. We know about now about the incidents. We know about the prevalence. We're going to hear more about the impact. But what the hell is going on with our kids that this not only is available, but, I mean, what's happening inside of our kids that they're doing this?
Well, there was some really interesting research that just came out where they were looking at, using brain research MRIs, the impact of doing bullying, either conventional bullying or cyberbullying. And what they're finding is that the kids who tend to do this, many of them, not all, but many of them, have, first of all, very high self-esteem, not low self-esteem like a lot of people assume, and they actually stimulate pleasure centers in the brain by doing this activity. They enjoy. It's entertaining, truly and enjoyable for them to do this. The other thing that's happening, and I want to kind of piggyback on something that Perry had said as well, is that they're creating social norms in these online communities where they really have different rules. It's kind of like the same student would not do something face-to-face that they would do online. And when they get on these social websites, I mean, a case in point, a good friend of mine, you know, we kind of visited her daughter's social website, and as many parents experience, she saw things on that website that she said, this is not my daughter. My daughter doesn't do these things, doesn't take these kinds of pictures and that kind of thing. The reality a lot of parents and teachers are facing today is that our kids are literally having almost different kinds of identities that they live out face-to-face, that they live out in the halls of our schools, and that they live out when they go on to a social website or they engage in some of the cyberbullying activity. And because adults aren't savvy to this, we can't have some of those conversations about the morality, the ethics, the harm, the pain that we do, again, as Perry mentioned, when we see a child acting out in front of us, and we can pull them aside and have that kind of corrective conversation.
That's really breathtaking. So what we're hearing is the external in our children's lives is really changing the internal, their psyches, and in fundamental ways, and that's not been heard of in our history, other than, you know, trauma, of course, changes the brain. But we're talking about a global environment changing our children's psyche. We're talking about cyberbullying today on Voices. Our number is 888-477-9499. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we're going to listen to a discussion I had with Tina Mayer, who's daughter committed suicide as a result of cyberbullying. Here in the studio to help us talk about it is Trish Jones. She's a professor in the Department of Psychological Study and Education at Temple University, very involved in a national program studying, teaching, training, conflict resolution in schools. She's also the author of Kids Working It Out, Stories and Strategies for Making Peace in Our Schools. I'm joined on the phone by Pari Aftab, a privacy lawyer managing cybercrime. She consults for government and the private sector. She's the founder of the website cyberbullying.org. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM, Philadelphia.
St. Mary Medical Center supports WHYY. Every day, St. Mary cancer specialists work to solve complex cases with innovative procedures. St. Mary specialists use tomotherapy with 3D imaging to help pinpoint cancer treatments without damaging surrounding tissue, destroy tumors from the inside out with HDR brachytherapy, and help revolutionize cancer diagnosis with PET CT. These procedures are being performed today at St. Mary Medical Center. It's your health. Expect more.
On the next Fresh Air, two looks at the current state of medicine. We talk with Dr. William Hansen about an electronic nose that identifies disease, destroying tumors with a proton beam and other high-tech developments in medicine. And Dr. Jim Withers tells us about treating the homeless on the streets of Pittsburgh. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about cyberbullying today and its ever-growing presence in our kids' lives. But what happens when it goes too far? I recently spoke with Tina Mayer. Many of you have heard of her. She's the mother of Megan Mayer, a teenage girl who took her own life after an online friendship with a boy named, quote, Josh Evans, close quote, took a turn for the worse. Megan developed a relationship with this alleged boy, and she was thrilled. However, he began posting hurtful bulletins for thousands of people to see in MySpace. In October of 2006, Megan hanged herself, which had been attributed to the final message Josh Evans left her. He said, "The world would be a better place without you." After Megan's death, it was discovered that Josh Evans was actually Lori Drew, the mother of one of Megan's friends, who lived right down the street. Drew was indicted on federal charges for conspiracy and for intent to inflict emotional distress via MySpace. So let's listen to our discussion.
Megan was not bullied online during the beginning. Megan had formed a friendship. It was, you know, it was a boyfriend online. It was a nice thing. Megan was cyberbullied for a two-hour period.
Well, tell me what you mean about cyberbullied for a two-hour period. What was happening to her?
When Megan had formed this friendship with Josh Evans, he had told her that, you know, she was beautiful, had beautiful pictures. Megan felt that there was a boy that was out there that did think that she was beautiful. And girls at this age are very vulnerable. Building up for about a five-week period, this is how this worked. It was almost an everyday occurrence. This is how this relationship built up. And on October 15th of 2006, Megan, out of the blue, received a message from Josh Evans that said, "I don't want to be friends with you anymore. You're not a nice person. I don't want to be friends." And Megan was shocked. She just didn't, this just came out of the blue. And Megan was the type of child that had, in the third grade, was diagnosed with depression and attention deficit disorder. She had been bullied in school. It wasn't the extensive bullying that children go through where they get beat up or beat up on the school bus. It was the bullying, the name-calling that still it stays with people through their lifetime. She was treated through counseling. She was on medication, and things changed through the years.
So here you are doing everything by the book as far as caring for your daughter. And then she gets cyberbullied. Did she tell you what was happening, how desperate she felt before she took her life?
The thing with children being cyberbullied is a lot of times they don't talk to the parents. I'm not sure if Megan would have talked to me or would not have talked to me. I knew what was going on because I monitored so closely the internet in our house. Megan had a MySpace account, but I made sure that I monitored everything. I had the password. She did not. I made sure I was in the room at all times when she was on the MySpace.
Well, I want to ask you, before we get to details about what happened and what the implications, you know, I'm listening to you about the way you dealt with her depression, her ADD, the way you monitored her online. In hindsight, I wonder what else could possibly have been done. That's worrisome for other parents listening because it sounds like you did everything that is recommended.
Well, in hindsight, you know,
Unfortunately, I look back and, you know, there's always those things that you look at as a parent. The last 2 hours of her life, I certainly, as a mom, with the situation Megan went through, she was cyberbullied in 2 hours. And I certainly wish I could take those 2 hours back and sit her down and talk with her.
Tell us, please, what happened over those 2 hours, Dina?
Megan had just handed her 14th birthday invitations out. I dropped her off at school, came back, picked her up. She was bouncing out of school, happy, ecstatic. I took her home, and she got on the computer. But remember, the night before, she had received that message from Josh Evans that said he doesn't want to be friends with her anymore. And I told her I would sign her on, but she only had a few minutes because I had to take her sister to the orthodontist. And they went back and forth for a few minutes of, he told her, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. I heard you're not a nice person. Megan said, I am a nice person unless somebody's mean to me. I told Megan, you need to sign off. I've got to take your sister to the orthodontist. She said, Mom, please just let me finish this last part of the message and I'll sign off, I promise. I said, okay, Megan, and I left.
So what were the exchanges between Megan and...
Well, at that point, Megan was saying, I am a nice person. What are you talking about? Who said this to you?
What happened after you left that pushed her over the edge?
Well, I called her a half an hour later to check on her, and she was crying. And I said, Megan, what's going on? And she said, Mom, they're being horrible. They're being mean. I said, Megan, who? And she said, Mom, on the computer, I said, are you on MySpace? And she said, yes. I said, Megan, you know the rules. Sign off of MySpace now, please, and I'll deal with it when I get home. And she said, okay.
When Megan said, they are being horrible, did it switch? Was there more than one person allegedly saying these things to her?
At the time, I wasn't aware, but yes, it did, because obviously she didn't sign off. Children, they don't have the mental ability to be able to sign off from situations like that. So when I got home, I came downstairs and looked on the computer. She was sobbing, and it was just absolutely horrible messages, name-calling, horrible things going back and forth. It was now two other girls who were involved, and that was it, just three people total. And they were calling her horrible names, such as a whore and other names I can't say on your program. But they were going out in bulletins, and the bulletins that go out in MySpace, in case people are not aware, go out to not only just those three people, but they go out to all of the friends on all of the people who are listed. So they can potentially go out to thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
That was Tina Mayer talking with us. She's the mother of Megan Mayer, a teenage girl who took her life after an alleged online friendship with Josh Evans. Turns out not to be with Josh Evans, and she committed suicide. If you'd like to hear a full interview with Tina, you can visit our website online. The full interview will be on in the next couple days at whyy.org/voices. Obviously, we're talking about cyberbullying today, and our number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. If you've been cyberbullied, if your child has been, if you're worried about it, give us a call. Or if you're a teacher, a school administrator, and would also like some more information about cyberbullying. My guests are Trish Jones, professor in the Department of Psychological Study and Education at Temple. She's the author of Kids Working It Out, Stories and Strategies for Making Peace in Our Schools. Perry Aftab is a privacy lawyer managing cybercrime, privacy, and cyber abuse. She's the founder of the website StopCyberbullying.org, which is an excellent website. Perry, let's start with you. The beginning of this story where this Josh Evans really seduced this young lady, Megan, over a period of time. This sounds like it's premeditated and a pretty sadistic setup.
It was, and I, for full disclosure, Tina works for me. She is part of our Stop Cyberbullying program and spearheading our Megan Pledge, a program to take a million teens and preteens to get involved in taking a pledge against cyberbullying. So she's very involved. We've been very involved in what she's been doing. Right now there's a trial that starts today, and they're going to be starting to select the jury where Lori Drew will be facing a jury of her peers in Los Angeles to find out if what she did constitutes a crime or not. Interestingly enough, the crime that she's being charged with is defrauding MySpace by pretending that she was a 16-year-old boy when indeed she was a neighborhood mom in her 40s. So she's being accused not of doing anything that led to Megan's death, but in defrauding MySpace when she set up the account. But what we're seeing now is that it appears that Lori was absolutely premeditated. She admitted to the police in an earlier police report that she set up the account and had Ashley Grill, a babysitter who worked for her, who was about 18 at the time, set up the account to see what Megan was saying about Lori's own daughter to see if she was spreading rumors, which from what I've seen is totally bogus. It continued for several weeks. It was designed to con Megan into trusting her. There were flirtatious and kind things that were done to groom her into sharing secrets and befriending her and entrusting her with other things. And never once during that time, to my knowledge, did Megan ever say anything about Lori's daughter. Hmm. And after a while, they started sharing the password so that others could use this account to harass Megan when they came home from school.
I want to switch gears here as we follow up this discussion. Trish, it sounds like Megan, and I mentioned this in the interview, had an open, honest relationship with her mother, and yet her mother never knew the level of desperation that she felt. Is this typical, and what can be done?
It's very typical. We have the research that we have now, especially over the last couple of years, says that over, on average, you know, half of the kids who experience cyberbullying never tell their parents. And that's kids who are, you know, preteen as well as teenagers. The majority of kids often don't tell anyone. If they do tell somebody, it might be a friend or somebody in their peer circle. And the research also tells us that it's the kids in their peer circle who are most likely to actually be cyberbullying them. It's hard for adults to know how to intervene and what to do if they're not aware that this is what the child is experiencing. Another example, folks might have known of that, the situation of Ryan Patrick Halligan, who was a young boy, 13-year-old in Vermont. There's a website, www.ryanpatrickhalligan.org, that his father set up. And basically, this is another one of those cases where he was being persistently cyberbullied. His parents did not know about it and came home to find him after he had committed suicide, and only then learned the extent of the cyberbullying that had been going on for weeks and months.
I do want to say this, though, and I have to say this disclaimer every time we hear about a suicide. Mm-hmm. Most suicides, vast number of suicides, are committed by people who have depression, have a clinical depression. And we heard this with Megan, too, that she had been diagnosed with depression. So it's rare that cyberbullying per se will lead to suicide if there's not a pre-existing depression. We've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. Let's start with Ellen. Ellen? Ellen, hi. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. Ellen, you're on the air.
Yes. Am I supposed to ask my question?
Yes, you are.
Yes. I was just calling to ask how to handle a situation that my 12-year-old daughter is experiencing right now in the sixth grade. It's not anywhere near as severe as the sad story that you've been discussing, but she has been receiving text messages from two of the girls in her class calling her a bitch, and there is caller ID on the phone, And my daughter immediately responded to the calls and said, I know you're doing this. And then the two girls, it came from two girls, each from their own phone, they immediately denied that they did it and apologized repeatedly. And then in school, she confronted them again, and they said, that they would never do such a thing. They know better than that, and that it was meant for a boy from their old school. And so now they're continuing to be mean to her because she doesn't believe their story.
All right, so let me put questions in your mouth, if I may, because these are the questions I'd have if I was in your position. So what should my daughter be doing, ideally, and what should I be doing as a parent, and what should the school be doing, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna pass those. Well,
I'm waiting to hear from the school. Well, I've called the school. This is my question for you: is should I or should I not notify the school? She goes to a private all-girls school, and should I or should I not notify the school of what has occurred? Because it's now been about a week and a half ago, and she actually kind of handled it sort of well, but it was very hurtful, and they have been mean to her, for a couple of months.
All right, I'm going to ask you to take the answers off, off the to listen to the answers. But I'll tell you this about notifying the school. I mean, I've got two experts here, but bullying is a social issue. Always, always, always notify the school. It's a school problem as much as a kid problem. All right, so let's hear what our experts are going to have to say about that.
Well, Trish, do you want me to start?
Okay, you can start, Perry.
Okay, a few things. Unlike regular bullying, which is always comes under the school's authority if it occurs on the school grounds, because cyberbullying often occurs outside of school grounds after hours but has an immediate and intended effect during the school day. Schools, if they are public schools, may not have the constitutional authority to do anything about what happens from home. Think of it as your kids are at my house at a barbecue on a Sunday, they get into a fist fight. On Monday morning, the public school can't suspend those students. No different in most cyberbullying. In this case, you have to let the school know. You're in a private girls' school, which is a hotbed of mean girl cyberbullying. This is a mean girl cyberbullying tactic. And you need to get them involved because there will be online and offline ramifications of what's going on, and it could turn into something far worse. What happens once the school gets involved is the challenge, because schools typically, and girls' private schools almost always, call everyone into the principal's office and says, apologize, make up to each other, and then leave, which only creates a worse situation for the target and doesn't do anything generally to stop the others. At 12, they may listen, but they're already in the ages where they may not. So what you need to do is, A, report it. Understand that it's possible, although it sounds like the kids were starting to confess it, it's possible that somebody could have grabbed their cell phones and harassed your daughter from someone else's cell phone and then put them back on the table. But if you've got two of them and it's repeated and they indicated that they were doing this for a boy, that's probably not the case. A good thing is to get them to sit down with a guidance counselor, someone who understands what they're doing, instead of he said, she said, trying to pull it apart to find out why they're interacting this way, why there's a problem in attention, and seeing if they can try to diffuse the situation without suspending some of the students and coming down hard with the other students may now sympathize with them.
Yeah, well, we know suspension never, ever works, and it only helps to make people, the schools, and the victim feel good temporarily. Trish, let's hear your reaction about what a parent, child, and school should do.
Well, let me first of all say that I think it's wonderful that your daughter did come to you, did share this with you, and that you have the kind of relationship where that could happen. And it is important to report it to the school, because even if the school does not have legal responsibility for behavior that occurred on their campus, they're a school community, and what they can and should do is to be able to raise this as an issue in their school community, not necessarily about your particular daughter's experience with those other two girls, but as a broader issue about how do we want to be with each other and how do we want to behave toward each other here in this school community. So they can be doing things. We know in all of the bullying research that the most powerful thing that we can do to stop bullying is to get an active bystander community, get kids, get the peers who basically say, we're not going to put up with this, and they can come up with ideas and plans to monitor this problem, to come up with peer norms for how they want to deal with the problem, and the school can then help to reinforce that.
All right. Let me interrupt you there, because we've got somebody online who I think can follow up that. Laura? Laura?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
My question has to do with anonymity. The tragic story you're talking about with Megan seems to rely on a social networking site where people, of course, can be not who they really are. I'm an administrator for an online learning site that supplements K-12 face-to-face instruction. So they go to school during the day, they get online at night and talk. And we give students accounts that are tied to their real names, tied to real email addresses through the school. Do you find that the cyberbullying depends on a sense of anonymity, or what kind of degree of bullying can we expect from an environment where students really are themselves?
Trish?
The more anonymous, the more likely kids will engage in cyberbullying behavior, and the more egregious the behavior might be. Yeah. Now, just because you remove anonymity doesn't mean you're not going to ever have any cyberbullying, but it certainly does decrease that, especially if you're talking about internet use that is linked with or that is under, let's say, a district or a school internet use policy.
Right.
So I think that whole idea of making sure that people know when they're online, they know people know it's them online and they can be traced in terms of what they did online is an important
right.
first step.
All right. Laura, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
We're going to have to take a short break. I want to come back with much more detail about what's a child to do, what's a school to do. I want to hear about your work with conflict resolution, Trish, and how a school can manage that. We're talking about cyberbullying today on Voices. Our number is 888-477-9499. My guests are Pari Aftab. She's a privacy lawyer managing cybercrime, privacy, and cyber abuse. She's also the founder of the website stopbullying.org. Trish Jones joins me here in the studio. She's a professor in the Department of Education at Temple University, and she's also the author of Kids Working It Out, Stories and Strategies for Making Peace in Our Schools. Well, you're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM, Philadelphia.
Support for WHYY comes from Raritan Valley Community College, hosting an adjunct part-time instructor career fair on Monday, November 17th, 11 to 1 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. More details at raritanvaljobfair.org.
Next time on Day to Day.
She said something terrible has happened.
Sister Mary Catherine Perko cannot erase her memories of 12 years ago. A parishioner attacked her fellow sisters at their home in Waterville, Maine. One of them died. Would they ever forgive the attacker?
We went to see his family. What could we do? It was so horrible.
Lessons of trust and forgiveness put to the test next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Support for WHYY's Health and Science Reporting Bureau is provided by the Philadelphia Healthcare Trust, a foundation committed to advancements in healthcare delivery, research, and education.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking about cyberbullying today, what it is, what its impact is, and more important, what can be done about it. My guests are Trish Jones, a professor in the Department of Education at Temple University, has written Kids Working It Out, Stories and Strategies for Making Peace in Our Schools. Pari Aftab is a privacy lawyer, and she's the founder of the website stopbullying.org.
Stopcyberbullying.org.
Thank you very much.
I'll take credit for the other one, too, if you want.
I do appreciate that. Listen, earlier on, you know, when we spoke with Tina Mayer, whose daughter committed suicide after being cyberbullied, I commented that it seemed like she did everything right. She supervised, you know, her online behavior. She was in good communication with her daughter. Perry, I want to turn to you. I mean, what else can a parent do?
Well, one thing we need to understand, which is something few of us do, all of it that happened to Megan happened in a 2.5-hour period. So aside from one saying, I'm not sure I want to be your friend anymore, the rest of the attacks, the horrible, hateful attacks, occurred between the time Tina left for the orthodontist and the time she came back. So it happened so quickly that she couldn't have really done much. The one thing, though, she could have done if she had known, and now it's something she teaches, is to disengage Megan from the computer. So we teach the kids to take five. Put down the mouse and walk away from the computer and no one will get hurt. Do something you love to do for 5 minutes. Listen to music, dance, shoot hoops, take a nap, hit your brother. Sorry. Do something that helps you find center, because having disengaged from the computer would have given her enough time to perhaps recognize that there was a better choice than taking her online.
And we therapists say that with red-hot emotions. I mean, our mothers said that, you know, take a breath. Perry, you did know I was a psychologist, yes?
I didn't. I just thought you were incredibly wise about all these things. And I have to also tell you, Trish is wonderful, and when this is over, I want her to join us in our Stop Cyberbullying Advisory Board, because she's amazing.
We'll get you guys together. But I have to tell you, as you were talking and sharing all this great knowledge and wisdom, I just raised a question in my mind about your relationship with your brother when you talked about hitting your brother for pleasure. But that's for another show. We'll pick that up later.
Actually, I do that because the kids react, and I now know that they're paying attention to what I say.
So now you know I was, too. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Terry on the line. Terry?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm sort of in the thick of this, trying to raise a teenage daughter, and not that she hasn't had any problems with cyberbullying per se, but she has gotten herself into some trouble on the internet, and it has caused me to step back from it all and say, wait a minute, what are we parents doing? We're the ones paying for the cell phones, paying for these computers, and all the research on the teenage brains and how they function, and I mean, there's a disconnect there.
What do you mean?
Just that we give them the technology, and then we stand back horrified at what they do with it. Hmm. I mean, even though I try to monitor her as best I can, it seems like an impossible job.
Well, I'd love to hear your reaction, Trish, because, you know, Terry's right that maybe their brains aren't developed enough to deal with this technology. They certainly don't have the social skills to deal with being able to have different personalities. On the other hand, you know, what's a parent to do? I mean, if literally everyone has access to this technology, you that would automatically make you a pariah.
I do think that we should question that assumption about whether everybody should have access to this technology. I really do. I think that there are good reasons for us to say, you know, we need to have a little bit more graduated exposure to some of these things. For example, you know, I don't know why an 11-year-old needs to have their own social website, you know, or why 10-year-olds need to have cell phones where they're doing a lot of these kinds of things. And I do think that one of the things we can do is, first of all, all, we need to start with better parent education. In a very recent survey in Pennsylvania, two-thirds of Pennsylvania parents who responded to an iSafe.org survey said that they had no idea how to protect their children in terms of cyber use. 15% of those parents knew what cyberbullying was. So the first step is we've really got to help schools, parent-teacher organizations, and other kinds of groups like WiredSafety.org, which is a wonderful organization, to get out there and to really spread the word to parents and say, look, here's what might happen, and here are ways that you can have controls over those technologies if you let your children use them.
What are the ways? I want to hear from both of you. What is a parent to do concretely? I'll start with you, Perry.
Well, I don't want to sound like I'm promoting anything because I work for free and running the charity and all of our things are free. But we have something called the Stop Cyberbullying Toolkit that will be out for free in January that schools can download with parent presentations and materials that they can use, as well as curriculum, lesson plans, school activities for the students, and risk management guides for everyone in administration, and help for the guidance counselors and mental health professionals and peer counselors who are dealing with this across the board, videos, animations, games, all kinds of things that you need, so that anyone who wants to can download this and put out programs within their own community that makes sense. So that's number one. Number two, we need to get past the kids hiding it from us. I know that Trish had cited to some research that was conducted. Our research of 40,000 middle schoolers across the United States done face-to-face when I actually go out and talk to them showed that only 5% would ever tell their parents because they don't trust them with the information. Parents are going to be overly dramatic, make it worse, or take the internet away among 52 other reasons that they have. So unless we talk to our kids up front and say, I know these things may happen, and I promise I won't blame you if they do, even if you were at a site where you weren't supposed to be or doing something you shouldn't have done, the first thing I care about is you. And then giving them a hug when that happens instead of picking up the phone, calling the FBI or your family lawyer, is a good start. We teach the kids to stop, block, and tell. In the frontline special that we did, you had some of my tweens, my tween angels, teaching that. And we go out and teach the kids to stop, not answer back, block the person or message, and tell a trusted adult. So the more we can teach kids how to react to it and how to help each other and how to avoid it by not sharing passwords, 70% of the kids we have polled share their passwords with their best friends. And the difference between a best friend and a cyberbully is just a matter of time.
Yeah, that's really interesting that small kids are trusting. Trish, I want to talk about something you mentioned in your book about restorative justice. And we know restorative justice works when it comes to bullying in schools. Does it work with cyberbullying, and what does it look like?
There's less research on whether it works specifically with cyberbullying, but my assumption would be definitely.
Tell us what it is and what it looks like.
Restorative justice is a series of programs that can be done in schools or communities, but the emphasis is on not punishing an offender that broke a policy or a rule, but on trying to find a way to repair the harm that was done and to reconcile a victim and an offender within the community that they're a part of. So, for example, in a restorative justice program in a school, if a cyber bully is caught, you know, part of that emphasis, a huge part of that emphasis, is going to be bringing together the child who was cyberbullied with the child who did the cyberbullying or the children who did the cyberbullying, along with a larger circle of people who were affected by that. It might be parents, siblings, friends, other teachers in the school, to really talk about, to have a group conference or to have a mediation if they want that, to really talk about what was the harm that happened, and how can we repair that harm so that we can move beyond this?
Give us an example. When you say, what was the harm that happened, what's the answer?
Right. So, for example, if someone, if my son has been cyberbullied and someone took a very unflattering photo of him on their cell phone during gym class and plastered that all over the websites that his friends look at, and we found out who that was, we might bring that child who did the cyberbullying with his or her parents, my son, myself, and my husband, teachers, their friends who are affected, and really sit down. And first of all, restorative justice programs assume that the person who did the harm has to take accountability. They have to own that harm and say, you know what, I did do this, and it wasn't the right thing to do, and it wasn't something I should do again. But then the progression proceeds to, what are we going to do together to make this better and to make sure this doesn't happen again, where all people in that community are sharing responsibility for reconciling and moving it forward. Pennsylvania has wonderful restorative justice programs in schools. We have some wonderful resources in this area if people are interested. And one of the reasons I feel so strongly about them is because whether it's in face-to-face conventional bullying or whether it's in cyberbullying, it really addresses the root issue of disconnection. People hurt other people they're not connected with. And if you're connected in a community and you have responsibility for them, there's less likelihood that they're going to harm one another in those ways.
Trish, one of the things I've always wanted to do is to take what you're describing and take it a step further. For once the bully and the victim understand what they've done, how they've harmed one another, and have done some healing and self-educating, I would like them to take it back to the class and then teach the class what they've done and lead a discussion in order to get everybody involved.
That's a great idea, and it's a really powerful suggestion. And we find, if you go on a lot of the wonderful websites that are out there, for example, the Stop Bullying Now website that's sponsored by U.S. Federal government, the Health and Human Services Department, you'll find a lot of opportunities for kids who have been bullied and kids who have been doing the bullying to interact with one another and to really come to a better understanding. You know, Perry and Ellen, I believe, said some things earlier that were really important. Kids, when they're teens and tweens and preteens, they aren't yet old enough to understand the level of harm they might be doing somebody else. This is a teachable moment for everybody, for all the people involved.
Yeah, as opposed to a crime.
That's right.
A teachable moment. Unfortunately, we're out of time, and we have to say goodbye to both of you. I really appreciate your coming out, and I really appreciate the work that you're doing. My guests have been Trish Jones, professor in the Department of Education at Temple University. She's the author of Kids Working It Out, Stories and Strategies for Making Peace in Our Schools. Thanks, Trish.
Thank you.
Perry Aftab is a privacy lawyer, and she's the founder of the website StopCyberbullying.org. Perry, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, I appreciate it, and I'm so happy to get to know both of you. I think together we can make a huge difference.
Next week on Voices in the Family, we'll be talking about gratitude, and we'd love to hear your stories about gratitude. Visit us at whyy.org/voices. Well, you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. The engineer for today's show's been Kevin Griffin. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is executive producer of radio content. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Voices in the Family is co-produced by Gita Simons and Elisa Walters. And me, I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Enjoy your week, my friends.